Brainwaves, hear the world differently. Bringing community mental health to you, raising awareness and challenging stigma. Tune in to 3CR Community Radio, Wednesdays at 5 p.m.
Melbourne's Drive Time Radio program, featuring community organisations, powerful stories and information. Find us at brainwaves.org.au. Proudly sponsored by Wellways Australia.
I would like to begin by paying my respects to the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, who are the traditional custodians of the land on which I am coming to you from today. Land where at Brainwaves we tell our stories, and land where the traditional custodians have told their stories for many, many years before us, and continue to tell their stories. I would like to pay my respects to Elders past and present, and acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander listeners who are listening today.
Just a warning, in today's show we'll be discussing suicide, so if this is confronting for you or distresses you, then please tune out. Hello and welcome to 3CR on 8:55 a.m, 3CR Digital Radio and 3cr.com.au. My name's Mark and joining me today we have clinical psychologist Natalie. Today we're going to be talking about her role as a clinical psychologist and AFL and how her passion for AFL has kind of become entwined in her profession as a clinical psychologist. So, yeah, thank you for joining us, Natalie.
Thank you for inviting me to be here.
Yeah, no problem. So I'm very curious about your role as a clinical psychologist. How long have you been practicing? And for our listeners who might not know the distinction between a clinical psychologist and a psychologist, could you please explain what that distinction might be?
Yeah, of course. So I've been practicing as a psychologist since 2018, and I work with adults with a sort of range of different mental health concerns, and I've worked in private practice and hospital settings. In terms of your question around the difference between a clinical and a kind of non-clinical psychologist, it's a question that often comes up. So I guess, look, all registered psychologists in Australia, they go through a really rigorous training program to be able to qualify and be able to kind of use that title of psychologist. It's a protected title. But in terms of how a clinical psychologist might differ, so clinical psychologists have usually undertaken postgraduate training, so either a master's degree or a doctorate in clinical psychology at an accredited university. And I think kind of one way that clinical psychology maybe differs to other kind of generalist psychologists is that we, as part of our training, we have a really strong focus on assessment and diagnosis of different mental health concerns. So that's probably one distinction. And the other is that is developing kind of skills and knowledge around how to work with more severe mental health presentations. So it might be sort of schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, psychosis. We're also trained to, of course, work with people who might be experiencing more commonplace concerns like depression and anxiety. But I think it's the other way that we're distinguished is we probably have that extra focus and training in working with people who have more severe presenting concerns with their mental health.
And I understand psychologists often specialize in providing supports to clients from certain backgrounds and experiences. Do you yourself have a particular interest in working with people with certain backgrounds or experiences? And if so, what kind of areas do you specialize in?
Yeah. So, you know, look, my experience has sort of been working with adults over the age of 18, and I've been really fortunate to have opportunities to work with people with a range of concerns, so depression, anxiety, personality disorders, substance use concerns. So I wouldn't say that I specialise in working with like a particular presentation, but I do have a lot of experience working with trauma, with substance use concerns, and working with people who have had like long-standing difficulties with their mental health.
How did you get into psychology? Was it an interest you had at a younger age, or is it a passion you discovered later in life?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's certainly been an interesting journey and definitely not a linear one. So I remember when I was probably about 14 or 15 and my mum said to me she thought I'd find studying psychology really interesting, and I think like most teenagers at the time I didn't take much didn't really give that kind of much weight. I didn't really take much notice of that at the time. And my interest probably lay elsewhere for a while, but then realised she actually had a point. So after I finished VCE, I studied psychology at uni, and I was, at that point, I was reluctant to pursue postgraduate study, so I wasn't interested in a research career. And at this stage, I would have been 20 or 21. And I remember thinking to myself, like, no one like twice my age is going to perceive me as someone who might be able to help them with their problems. So at that point, I went in a different direction and I studied and practiced physiotherapy, and I really enjoyed this. And probably, like, I think one of the things I enjoyed about it the most that I didn't expect was just that opportunity to build relationships with my clients. So, you know, I really got to know them, to know about them, their lives, their families, their work, what their interests were. And inevitably over time, you know, I'd have patients come in for assistance with an injury or with pain, but then they'd start opening up about other stuff going on in their life. So it might be that their marriage was going through a really difficult patch, or I remember like one woman who came in because for assistance with pain, and she'd just had a baby, and she was saying that, you know, that since she'd become a mum, like her anxiety levels had just intensified, and she'd never sort of felt that way before, and it was, you know, really troubling her. And of course, you know, at that point, you know, my role is to sort of ensure that they are then being supported to engage with people who can help them through what's happening for them. But I think it was kind of those processes start to come to kind of like bring me back to that sense of coming back to psychology. And I probably have to give my husband some credit as well. He's worked in mental health for 25 years. He's got a background in social work and psychotherapy. So we just had so many books all over the house, and we're often talking about it. So I think that was a really big influence. So eventually I went back, I did an honours degree, and I did postgraduate training in clinical psych. So that's, I guess, a bit about how I've ended up where I am.
Do you feel that? Do you feel like, you know, at 21, you're like, oh, no one's going to take me serious as someone that can help them in their life. So do you feel that, or having that extra life experience that you had between that sort of realization and to the point where you felt like, you know, actually I think I've lived enough and experienced enough and interacted with a variety of different people in my profession as a physiotherapist that I think I can actually do this now? Did that sort of give you a bit more of a confidence boost as well?
I think it did. And I mean, I think, you know, those professional experiences were certainly really important. But I think, you know, probably and for all of us, you know, that outside of our professional life is happening to us as well. And there's, you know, different, you know, challenges that come up along the way that you kind of have to deal with as you, you know, go through, you know, your 20s and your 30s. And I think it was probably those factors as well, is that I felt like I had kind of been through enough kind of challenges in sort of the more personal part of my life as well, that I kind of felt like I was at a stage I could kind of go back and train, and I could approach the work with the degree of life experience I felt I needed to have to be able to do the work that I do.
And so today we actually invited you on because two of your passions, psychology and your love of AFL, have recently intersected. And before we get into that, could you tell us a bit about AFL and, or at least your relationship to AFL and what the game means to you, and, you know, how long have you followed the sport, and, you know, what, maybe, I don't know, if you do you want to tell us what team you go for?
Yeah. I'm a Western Bulldogs supporter. Before they were the Western Bulldogs, they were Footscray. I was a Footscray supporter as well. So it's hard for me to remember a time in my life when I didn't follow the AFL. So I grew up in Williamstown, and my dad, he was a passionate Footscray supporter. So in my house, you didn't get a choice about which football team you followed. I think my dad, he was so devoted. So for some of the listeners may or may not know, but in 1989, the Footscray Football Club at the time, they went through a really significant crisis, and they were under threat of not being able to exist as their own entity because they were just in so much financial trouble. So my dad was really heavily involved in raising money, and fortunately enough money was raised that the club survived, and then it became the Western Bulldogs at the end of 1996. Played as the Western Bulldogs in 1997. And, you know, I think the other thing is that kind of like growing up in Williamstown, like a lot of the players actually lived locally. So like I'd be down at Coles or kind of out and about and you'd just see people, which was kind of cool. But
so they're literally a part of your community.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. But I mean, I think kind of reflecting back and thinking about it now, like for me, footy is a really family experience and what's what it was growing up, you know, going to the footy with family. And I'm relieved that like both of my kids, they're both passionate Bulldog supporters as well. So it's really nice to kind of see that love kind of passing down through the different generations.
What about your husband?
Hollywood. So.
All right. So both the kids go for the Bulldogs, though. Nobody wanted to be a Collingwood supporter. How old is the Bulldogs football club? Do you know when they originated roundabout?
They actually had their 100-year celebration earlier this year. So So before the AFL, we had it was the VFL. So they were just Victorian-based clubs. So Footscray joined the VFL in 1925. So they just celebrated their 100-year anniversary of being part of the league earlier this year.
Right. Awesome. That's quite a milestone, especially considering that your dad sort of played a role in keeping it alive in the 80s. So that must have been, I don't know, great to know that, that your dad did sort of kept it going, kept it alive. And also, if I'm remembering correctly, that they won a grand final a few years ago. So
In 2016. So I'd say that kind of that month of September in terms of they had to play three finals before they then played in and won the grand final was probably one of the best sporting months of my life.
I'm glad you got to experience that. Can you share with us how your love of the sport and your profession as a psychologist have intersected recently? From what I understand, a tragedy has recently occurred in the sport, and that sort of got you thinking about a lot of things in regard to AFL.
Absolutely. So, I mean, look, I think reflecting back, I think there's been kind of an intersection kind of here and there during my time kind of working in mental health. So I think the examples that really stand out for me, so one of them is a Western Bulldogs player called Tom Boyd. He played in the 2016 Premiership team and he abruptly walked away from the game the following year because of mental health concerns. And I remember at the time, like, feeling, like, really shocked. And I think, you know, kind of on retirement, Tom's been an amazing kind of advocate for mental health. You know, he's sort of really shared his story and been really open about kind of what he experienced. And then I think the other event that kind of I sort of reflect on is the death of Danny Frawley. And it was probably when Danny Frawley passed away that I really started to think more about the impact of contact sports like AFL on someone's long-term mental health. And then, of course, in 2025, we've had the horrific passing of two twin brothers, so Troy and Adam Selwood. So both were really well-regarded AFL players. Troy played at the Brisbane Lions and Adam played for West Coast, and Adam played in their 2006 Premiership team. And tragically, they both passed away following suicide, so Troy in February and then Adam in May. And this really kind of rocked the AFL community and I think rightly kind of brought up further discussion around mental health awareness and suicide prevention and the role of the AFL in this process.
And one of the things that you mentioned in the article on mental health in AFL is the reality athletes often get involved when they're really young and, you know, not very experienced, quite vulnerable. Yeah, I think you might be able, we might not think of professional athletes as being vulnerable, but, you know, I feel that any young person that lacks experience and is sort of thrown into such a big, overwhelming world probably haven't acquired the strength that they might later in life to deal with those types of things. And not only do they, you know, not have a lot of life experience and, you know, the resilience that we develop as we get older, they're put under a lot of pressure to succeed and excel at their sport, obviously from the outside and probably, you know, from within as well. And they're also, you know, suddenly public figures. They're celebrities, basically. And they're discussed in the media, on TV and all that kind of stuff. Social media, you know, which can be pretty brutal. Do you feel the AFL do enough to equip athletes, especially, you know, younger players, with the skills to manage everything that comes with joining a major sporting league?
Yeah. Look, I think kind of without kind of being inside the system, it's sort of difficult to answer whether the AFL is doing enough to equip athletes for kind of the reality of life inside elite sport, but they have certainly developed a lot of programs and structures, particularly over probably the last sort of 5-6 years, and kind of put these structures in place to try and support players who might find that adjustment to public life challenging. And clubs nowadays, they definitely have kind of in-house resources to help players cope with the pressures that come with being an AFL player.
And that the AFL do have a mental health and wellbeing strategy in place. What does that include? And do you feel it's anything else might need to be changed, you know, in light of some of the recent sort of mental health difficulties and tragedies that have occurred?
Yeah. So, I mean, the policies at stand, it's sort of underpinned by these ideas, including prevention, promotion, education, early intervention. And the AFL, they've partnered with organisations such as Origin, who do a lot of work in the youth mental health field, and they currently have a mental health awareness game called Spuds Game. Then we have the AFL Players Association. They also have like a tailored counselling program that current and past players can utilise. And then they've also been programs set up at community level to try and ensure that there's a industry-wide focus around supporting mental health and wellbeing. So I think all these initiatives are great in terms of, you know, forming key partnerships, acknowledging that mental health is important to talk about and address at any level of the sport, and having resources in place for current and past players. So I think, you know, those are really, really positive structures and processes. But I guess in terms of improvement, it's sort of unclear whether all clubs have the same level of funding available to devote to wellbeing and mental health. And at this point, there isn't, from what I've seen, I haven't been able to find any data about how effective these initiatives have been. I'm sure they probably will do their own research internally, but yeah, I'm not sort of sure about what that data might look like. And I think the other thing is that there might be ongoing fears about asking for help, even when there are structures and processes in place, because of the stigma. And I think if we talk about particularly the for males in the sport, it can be seen as being weak to kind of ask for help, or there might be fears about how speaking openly could impact their opportunity for team selection and, you know, their career longevity as well. And I think the other thing that, again, I'm not 100% sure whether this is being done or not, but it's just not clear how the AFL are monitoring players, particularly post-retirement, in terms of the prolonged effects of concussion and how this might be impacting mental health. So I think those are some things that they could look at.
Yeah, that was something that I actually did find really, at least it did sort of make me feel more curious about, yeah, how are players, you know, once they retire, you know, what kind of, are they provided ongoing support from the AFL for, you know, physical injury and of course also you know, mental health related things. So yeah, I would like to know more about that.
Once players retire, they can continue to seek support and assistance with their mental health through the AFL Players Association, so that's a resource that players can tap into for the rest of their lives.
Awesome. I wonder what it must be like for AFL players to retire from the sport that has, you know, consumed much of their youth. And are there risks associated to players exiting the sport as they sort of progress onto the next chapter of their lives? Is there, you know, 1 minute, you know, AFL is everything, and then, you know, it's their, you know, it's their identity, you know, consumes much of their identity, and then, yeah, how does one make sense of who they are outside of that world?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think those things you mentioned around, you know, identity and how much of your life is, you know, that players devote to, you know, to being their best and performing at that elite level, kind of what happens when that is sort of no longer kind of part of their daily life, that, you know, I think retirement can be, you know, a really challenging time, you know, and for a lot of people who, you know, are fortunate enough to play in the AFL, you know, they're usually living out a childhood dream, and, you know, the demands of the game as well, it can make it hard to have the time and the space to kind of reflect and think about what your outside interests might be. I think clubs are a lot better at ensuring that players do start to kind of think about life beyond football to sort of support them through that process of retirement. But I think when retirement does inevitably roll around, there can be a real loss of purpose and meaning across sort of multiple contexts. So obviously there's that sort of loss of not being able to be part of a game that you've, you know, probably developed a deep love for over a number of years. There's a loss of routine and rhythm that, you know, we all kind of develop whatever it is we're doing in our daily life. And to have to, I guess, readjust that and find a new normal, that can be really, really challenging. And then I think, you know, there's also that there can be this real loss of connection, and that suddenly you're not seeing, you know, your teammates, your coaches, the boot starters, all the people around the club who you'd see day in, day out, they're just not there anymore. The way they're there in your life changes. So I think that loss of connection would also be really difficult to navigate, kind of along with this sort of change in identity and trying to figure out how you're going to experience and develop meaning and purpose in this new chapter of life. That transition, I think, can be really challenging.
And what about injury sustained during the course of their careers as professional athletes? What's the relationship between injury and mental health in this context?
Yeah. So I think, you know, there's definitely potential for like a player to retire and have sort of long-term effects of injuries that they might have sustained like during their career. And this could have a flow-on effect to their mental health as well. So if we think about chronic pain, for example, so chronic pain is when an individual experiences extreme pain sensations in a sort of sustained way over a long period of time. And we know that unfortunately for people who do have challenges with chronic pain, that they can then develop associated challenges with their mental health, so depression or anxiety. And they may respond to the pain, to the physical pain or the psychological distress or both by using substances, for example. So it can kind of, you can kind of, there can be this process where, you know, a physical injury can then start to have mental health consequences that individuals need to navigate. And I mean, I think in terms of the growing awareness around the long-term impact of repeated concussion injuries, I mean, when I watched footy like back in like the 90s, you know, if a player got concussed or knocked out, it wasn't uncommon for them to actually play again in that game. And you know, it's kind of, it's crazy to think about now, you know, luckily nowadays, you know, we have protocols and guidelines around how concussion's managed and you know, you never see that these days, which is great. But I mean, I think I talked about Danny Frawley a little bit earlier in our chat, and for those that may or may not know, so Danny played for St Kilda and he experienced a number of concussions in his career, and he then had real difficulties with depression on retirement, and tragically he ended up taking his own life. But after he died, it was determined that he had been suffering from a condition called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, or CTE. So this is an injury to the brain that happens from repeated concussions, repeated head knocks. And one of the symptoms of this brain disease is depression along with irritability and impulsivity. So those factors together, you know, can really start to increase someone's risk around suicide and suicidality.
And from what I understand, AFL clubs do employ something called a sports psychologist.
Yeah.
So what is a sports psychologist? What is their role if they're employed by a football club? And mental health issues outside of their role as an athlete, not something that they usually focus on during those types of sessions?
So, you know, a sports psychologist, again, they would normally have to complete postgraduate training in sports psychology and go on and do more practice and more supervision before they can kind of use that title of sports psychologist. And, you know, their focus tends to be on working with athletes around maximising performance. So they might look at motivation, performance enhancement, and like ways to cope well with the world of elite sport. And they are definitely involved in supporting athlete wellbeing, and they do have capacity to work with things like depression or anxiety. So a session with a sports psychologist could involve exploring kind of any of those concerns.
Mm. Do you believe AFL ought to use their platform to promote awareness around mental health issues and suicide prevention? And one of the ways they can do that is by introducing a dedicated mental health round. As I understand it, there are several themed rounds held throughout the AFL season. What are themed rounds? How do they work?
Yeah, so themed rounds are when there's a particular round in the AFL season that's kind of linked with an issue or a cause kind of relevant to the broader Australian community. So I guess in this way, footy clubs are able to use their profile to raise awareness about important causes and I guess kind of make the game a little bit more about what goes on the football field.
Right, right. And what are some of the positive impacts these themed rounds have had on the broader community beyond the sports field?
Yeah. So if I might sort of talk about sort of two of the theme rounds that the AFL currently run, and I guess what some of the impacts of that have been. So one of them is the Anzac round. So this coincides with Anzac Day, and it's about the football community really kind of paying respect to the Anzacs, our servicemen and servicewomen. And as those generations of, you know, World War One and World War Two veterans pass away, I think the AFL continuing to kind of honour their sacrifices, their bravery, and the impact that their service has had on them and their families kind of keeps the memory and the message alive in our community. And then I guess another example of a theme round we have is called the Big Freeze Round. So this is a more recent initiative, and it was inspired by a man called Neil Danaher. For those that don't know, Neil played for Essendon in the old VFL, and he was then head coach at Melbourne. And in 2013, he was sadly diagnosed with motor neurone disease. And at the time of his diagnosis, there was no cure. And unfortunately, a cure is still being sought. But the AFL have come on board to develop a Big Freeze Round to both raise awareness of MND and also to support fundraising efforts so that money can be sent on researching potential cures. And it's such a fantastic initiative. It's become really popular over time. And every year there's like they release these new like Big Freeze beanies. So a new one comes out every year, and they've almost become like a little bit of a fashion statement. Like you'll see them kind of everywhere. They're really cool. So I guess those are kind of some different ways that that theme rounds can have an impact kind of in the community beyond the football field.
And from your point of view, why would a mental health round in the AFL have a positive impact? Mm-hmm. And in what ways do you believe it will have a positive impact on, you know, both on the field and obviously, you know, as a, you know, in the AFL community as broadly, you know, how would that work?
Yeah. So I think, I mean, look, interestingly, the idea of a mental health round has sort of been floated before, but it's sort of never really gotten off the ground. And I think over time, as more and more players and individuals linked with the AFL system have found ways to talk about their mental health challenges. So there was Tom Boyd that I sort of mentioned before. He's been amazing. Adam Treloar, who he currently plays at the Western Bulldogs, but he played at GWS and Collingwood before his time at the Bulldogs. I think particularly at Collingwood, he went through a really difficult time with anxiety. And then earlier this year, Harry McKay from Carlton was sort of talking about going through a really, really dark, bleak period prior to the start of the 2025 season. And these are just a kind of few examples. There are definitely more more players and individuals out there who had been really open about their challenges. And I think in our culture, you know, footy players, they're often put up on pedestals. So I guess, again, if members of the community, particularly men, if they are able to see other men they hold in really high regard, if they see them talking about mental health in a way that shows that this can be done, that, you know, it's not shameful, it doesn't make them feel less than, I think that's really powerful, and it has the potential to help men to feel more comfortable to talk about the challenges they're going through. And I think, you know, given the platform of the AFL, if they were to adapt a mental health round, that this has the potential to also affect policy change. So not just at the level of like check in with your mates or reach out for help, like those are really well-meaning and they're really important, but they don't necessarily change things at a policy level. So they don't kind of lead necessarily to better investment in, you know, in mental health services and the mental health system, and better investment in research and treatment that's going to be helpful. And I think that's some of the ways that a mental health round could help.
Over the past couple of decades, the discussion around mental health issues has become, for lack of a better word, more mainstream. Why do you suppose the AFL has, I don't know if you'd describe it the way, they've been dragging their feet a bit on sort of tackling this in a more productive way so far, or what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really, I guess, again, I can't really speak from an AFL perspective, but I think there's been a gradual destigmatizing of mental health, and that's a really long-term process, and it's certainly not finished. You know, I think that stigma is still there. But I think as it is starting to kind of wear off and within our culture, and there's been more high-profile individuals in like sporting and non-sporting areas are talking openly about their experiences, I think this is sort of translating into more open conversations. In terms of the AFL, you know, it was really sort of like in 2017, the AFL Players Association, like they set up a mental health education program, and that was, I guess, the foundation upon which kind of other policies and initiatives have sort of grown from.
And I think you mentioned this in the article, and I'm aware that this is a fact, but it's true that men are the most affected people in Australia when it comes to suicide. What are the current known statistics, or, you know, between men, women, non-binary and trans people and suicide?
Yeah, so I think over time, the suicide, what we call suicide completion rates, so that's when a person undertakes a suicidal act and it ends in their death, that the completion rate is higher in males than in male and female populations. So men tend to use kind of more violent methods in that process of attempting, which probably explains why the completion rates are higher in males compared to females. But females are admitted to hospital more often for suicide attempts, either arising from suicidal thoughts and or deliberate self-harm behaviours. So the research in terms of transgender populations, it's starting to emerge, and some data I was looking at over the last couple of weeks has indicated that suicidality is really overrepresented in transgender populations. You know, there's a really, really high proportion of individuals experiencing suicidal thoughts. And sadly, there are really high rates of lifetime suicide attempts as well in this community. And I think some other data I was looking at, we sort of saw that up to 90% of individuals who identify as non-binary will experience suicidal thoughts at some point in their life as well. And, you know, one of the strongest predictors of sort of suicidal thoughts and suicide attempts is depression. And the research, some research that came out of the University of Melbourne a few years back, sort of identifying that there are very high rates of depression in transgender and non-binary populations. So they're certainly a really vulnerable population when it comes to mental health and suicidality.
Mm-hmm. And besides yourself and the co-authors of the article you recently penned regarding, you know, this issue, Are there others out there advocating for more mental health awareness, including the introduction of a mental health round in the AFL?
Yeah, there are definitely people who support this idea. So one is a guy called Patrick McGorry. He's a really well-known psychiatrist and he's a proponent of early intervention for youth mental health. And there are also some past players who have come out in favour of mental health rounds. So Wayne Schloss, who played at North Melbourne, and Jimmy Bartel from Geelong.
And if any of our listeners share your passion, how might they get involved in advocating for the dedicated mental health round in the AFL?
Jump on social media and start having a chat. You can can contact the AFL, email them, send in your concerns. If you're a member of an AFL club, contact them as well. Let them know that you think that this is something that the AFL should be doing more to raise awareness around.
And I'm going to include the article that you did write in the on the website, the Brainwaves website, if anybody wants to read it. But where can our listeners find out more about some of the things that we've spoken about today?
Yeah, so you're certainly welcome to read the article on the Bayside Psychotherapy website. And the article has links to kind of more information around the issue. So I think that's probably a really good starting point.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing, your knowledge with us. I feel like coming from the point of view of someone that doesn't really follow the AFL, I feel like I learned a lot, and I think you sort of sparked my interest in, finding out more about some of what's going on in the sporting world, especially in regards to, mental health issues, and also the relationship between sporting injuries and how they can impact a person's mental health ongoing. Yeah.
Look, you're very welcome. It's been lovely to spend this time chatting together about this.
If any of the things we have talked about today have distressed you, you can contact Lifeline on 131114 or Listen Well Warmline on 1300 111 500.